Robbie, you won't believe it. This team is garbage already.
We talking about the Bulls or the Warriors?
Oh, don't save it. Save it, save it, save it. I'm bringing up the Bulls.
Oh, God!
Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA. We are recording this on Sunday night. The Jazz and Clippers are about to tip off in LA, but Andrew Hahn is running this podcast instead of going there. But did you go get your sprinkles on your chocolate sundae already beforehand?
I did get my sprinkles. It's a vanilla sundae, Brian. It's a soft vanilla. It's very important to get this right. It's vanilla. There are rainbow sprinkles.
This is something that Andrew will do. Andrew will go to Staples Center for the pregame of like a Clippers game or a Lakers game. You know, he'll do some work. You know, he'll have some conversations with people. He'll eat the ice cream and then he'll leave and go back across the street. I mean, to work. He's not going back across the street, you know.
Well, we already know the outcome of the game, so it doesn't really matter.
Because
everyone knows.
The people who listen to this will know. But.
Well, they'll know now that what the outcome is. But we know because obviously we control all the games.
Mm-hmm. Right. From our evil lair in our studios in LA. Joining us from Oklahoma City is our man in Oklahoma, Royce Young. Hi, Royce.
No soft serve machine in my house, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, you and I are going to talk about Baker Mayfield later.
Yeah. I'm hurt.
Joining us from his new apartment in San Francisco because he had to move across the bay like all the other Warriors is Nick Friedel. Nick, how's life on the more expensive side of San Francisco?
I don't enjoy it as much, B, right now. I need the good people out there listening to us to recommend a bunch of stuff about San Francisco because I actually just spent most of the day in Oakland, and I was reminiscing about my year in Oakland and how much I enjoyed it. And at this point, I think the Warriors would love to go back in time too. But
you're not the only one reminiscing.
That's for sure. That is for sure.
So let's just start right there in San Francisco. I talked about this a little bit beforehand, or earlier this week on the pod. I guess last week. By the time this comes out, this has been a historic run for this team. And it's been a historic fall. So we know what's happened. You know, we know about all of these injuries. We don't really need to go over that again. You know, it's very unfortunate. I think the question, Nick, really is, what do the Warriors do now? What do they do with the rest of this season? What do they do with Draymond Green? And really, I think something that's going to become a big thing to talk about, and it may not be this discussion loud today, but I got to believe it's going to be a discussion relatively soon. What to do with D'Angelo Russell? I know that the Warriors are probably still in a little bit of shock, but can you kind of relate the feeling that you're getting being around what's left of that team?
I think the shock is still there. The last few days have been just nuts in the sense that nobody can believe all these things have happened. And Steve Kerr made it a point, B, the other night to say it's not just Steph getting hurt, Draymond getting hurt, Russell now dealing with an ankle injury. It's dating back to the finals, of course, with KD getting hurt and Klay getting hurt. Collectively, I think the entire organization is just kind of like, are you kidding me? Is this really happening? But as far as pushing it forward, there's no pressure on these guys at all now. None. This is a year all about development. Joe Lacob told me as clearly as he could that this team isn't going to tank, but that's all in the packaging. The reality is, and the reality was even with a healthy Steph and Draymond, they weren't very good. They're hard capped. They've got issues down low. Kevon Looney, that injury has gotten lost in the shuffle, but nobody's sure when he's going to return. But the reality is, in the next few months, they just have to focus on getting Eric Paschal, Jordan Poole, these younger guys. They have to see if they fit in the system. And for what it's worth, I like Paschal a lot. I think he's going to get even better. But the question as far as the next step for them is Russell, B. And does he fit or not? I mean, we're a couple weeks in. Nobody knows yet. They're going to run a lot more pick and rolls than we're used to seeing from the Warriors. But this is the question they need to answer in the next few months. Does he fit long term enough to feel like you can build around him? Or are you going to look to move him for an extra piece along with that Iguodala trade exception that expires at the beginning of July, which is worth $17 million and change? That's what they have to answer in the next few months. But as far as winning and losing, it's not about that at all. I really believe this could be a blessing in disguise for them in the future, getting this high pick. But we're going to have to see how all the rest of the pieces shake out.
Yeah, something else that is just interesting. It's a little bit of housekeeping, but it's worth pointing out, is that they were in danger of losing their pick this year, right?
It's 1 through 20 protected.
Right. So that is – I mean, it's now laughable to think that they would finish – inside the top 10. I mean, but that was reasonable even with the injuries. I mean, we thought that there was a chance that they were going to be still be a top 10 team. So number one, they're going to keep that pick, and they don't have to give it up. They now have to give up a 2025 second round pick. It was one of the strangest trades. One of the strangest little, just as a real quick aside here, and that's what we do in podcasts. We have asides. So what happened was, Durant had already decided to go to the Nets. The Warriors come to him and say, hey, let's do a sign and trade. If you will participate in this sign and trade, you can help us and we can get D'Angelo Russell. Otherwise, they wouldn't have been able to sign him. And from what I was told, Durant basically was like, well, you're not trading me straight up for D'Angelo Russell. You're just not doing it. I mean, and you know, and I guess more power to him. You know, there used to be in the previous CBA, there used to be an advantage you could get by participating in a sign and trade. But, you know, Kevin was, they kind of were reliant, you know, there's no advantage to it for him. They were relying on Kevin to help him out. And so they had to include this first round pick, which they did begrudgingly. But the nature of the pick protection is so bizarre. So they gave him a first round pick basically to say that we gave a first round pick, but if it didn't convey this year, which it now will not, it's not that it goes over to next year or turns into 2 second round picks, you know, in down the line. It converts to a 2025 second round pick, which is as farthest out you could possibly trade a second round pick. Just a strange little piece of maneuvering and negotiation that went on to get Durant to agree to that trade. All right, anyway, so in addition to them keeping their pick, that is relevant. The other thing I think that is important to point out is that they now have an opportunity to spend this year looking at players. And if you look at some of the teams out there that have gone through, I mean, don't call it tanking, they have been able to get some stuff accomplished with some players. And so some of these guys that they've signed, I don't think they really have much use anymore. And so I think we're going to see the Warriors make a series of trades. They're all going to seem minor in the short term. But I think we're going to see them be pretty active messing with this roster going forward.
Well, this was a gap year to start with, though, right, Nick? I mean, like, I think a lot of people kind of thought that let's see what they can do. But it wasn't even a for sure thing that D'Angelo Russell was going to make it past the trade deadline this year. Right. I mean, so they were always kind of waiting to see what would come after this year, where they would try to kind of restructure and rework things to get back to the level of contending. So like you said, Nick, I mean, in some ways, this is sort of, I mean, this is not the way you want it to go down. This is not the way you want to completely just take a team that went to 5 straight finals and fall to this level. But if you are, it's better to bottom out than just sort of stay mediocre. Lose that first round pick, because the way the Warriors are going to get back is you can restock through first round talent. They also are a destination. I mean, especially the fact that they're in San Francisco now, the new arena, they're you know, a marquee franchise. You've got Steph and Draymond, Steve Kerr, so they're a free agent destination. So it may feel bad right now that the Warriors have completely fallen flat on their face, but they can rebuild this really quickly.
No doubt. No doubt.
They don't even have to rebuild, in all honesty, because they're already kind of built. They just it's like the greatest tank ever, because all their Hall of Famers will be coming back.
Right. You know. and you also can preserve, I mean, logically, you can preserve a year of wear and tear off of Steph and Draymond, even, and Clay, I guess, sort of. But I mean, that he's rehabbing, so it doesn't really count. But and then also, I mean, like, kind of existentially, you don't have the smear put on Steph Curry now. There was already, we were hearing it in Oklahoma City, Nick, with that, the way it was looking.
It was kind of like,
where's Steph Curry? Like, why is, you could hear the grumbles beginning around NBA Twitter and stuff about Steph Curry, as illogical as some of them might have been. But if the Warriors go through a year of basically kind of getting their heads beat in, and Steph is not showing up and looking like Steph, and he's not hitting 8, 9, 10 threes, there, you know, the takes are going to start coming. So on that side of it, not that it really matters to the Warriors, but they can also kind of preserve some of that, so to speak.
No doubt. And Royce, I'd add this too. In talking to just some of the coaches and some of the personnel people from the outside, and this dates back to going back to July, August, that everybody kind of went, oh, well, the Warriors still have Steph and Draymond, and now you have D'Angelo Russell, and you keep Kevon Looney. This team can still make a push, and then Clay may come back. When you talk to the people that were around these guys every day, they were like, what the hell is everyone talking about? Like, are you serious? Like, there are 9 guys on this team who are 23 years old or younger. This was always more of a developmental year internally than what a lot of people wanted to give them credit for. And it wasn't like they didn't think they could still win some games, but the idea that all of these different things were going to happen, and in that situation, no injuries were going to occur, and then Clay was going to ride in on his white horse and help save the day going into the playoffs. You talk to some of the Warriors people, and they're just like, are you kidding me? Like, come on.
Yeah. Well, that's a great point that Royce made about Steph, though. For some reason, I mean, there's probably various reasons, but for those various reasons, NBA players just don't want to give Steph his due. And, and I was just reminded of it, whether Michael Jordan misspoke or it was semantics or whatever.
Right.
It was just a reminder of that. And it's kind of interesting, because last year, one of the things that I came to learn, it really happened over All-Star weekend. I did interviews with like 15 or 18 players. Andrew Hahn was with me the whole time. And we were asking these players for an ESPN thing about James Harden. And like, the shade was just coming. People, they're NBA players don't like the way Harden plays. NBA players just don't seem to appreciate what Steph has done. And, it's wild. It's wild to hear some of that. So I think you're right, Royce. So, but Nick, let me bring up the Russell thing. I know what the Warriors are saying. Okay, I know that they're saying, they didn't sign him to trade him and all this stuff. And I'm not saying that you even seriously contemplate that now. But what do you think? Because I wasn't sure that D'Angelo Russell was a max player before the summer. Now, clearly, he was a max player. He got multiple max offers. The Timberwolves, they didn't have the space to do it, but they were offering him the max. The Warriors offered him the max. I don't know if he got anything else. I don't like that contract. And it's possible that his value may never be higher than it is currently. So is it, does that have anything? I mean, what do you think they're going to do there? Do you think they keep him, or do you think that they? I think you have to wait till January to trade him, because he's got such a raise. But do you think come January they get interested in listening to offers?
Yes, I think ultimately they move him
this year.
I'm not so much this year, but I would guess between January or whenever it's allowed and the summer. I would think that. Whether it's Russell and that pick that we've been talking about, or Russell for a couple other pieces, I just I have never believed from the beginning that he was a long-term fit here. Now, D'Angelo knows that full well. He and I have talked about it a lot, and he understands the business of basketball, and it's not going to be a surprise to him, certainly, if that happens. But
and he got a max contract.
He got a max deal. Yeah. But I'd add this, B, and I think this is an interesting part of the conversation. I was having this this discussion the other night, actually, with our buddy Anthony Slater from The Athletic, and we were sitting at the game, and we were going back and forth because the point was, okay, well, what happens if Klay doesn't get hurt? What happens if Kevin gets hurt? The Warriors thought, like a lot of people, that he was probably going to leave, and then he leaves. Well, what happens if Klay doesn't get hurt? Does that mean Andre Iguodala stays and they never have to make that move? Because the reason they made that D'Angelo Russell move was because they didn't want to end up with nothing for Durant. I mean, that forced their hand because they didn't want him to walk away for nothing. So now you have him. What's his trade value going to be? What's the market for him going to be? I'm not sure. But if you're asking me right now today at the beginning of the season, if I think D'Angelo Russell is here a year from now? No, I don't believe so. I think he'll probably be elsewhere.
Well, I think the thing that, you know, and again, I know that we're very early. I understand that. I'm not saying that this would happen, that, you know, anytime soon. But I think if you get serious about it, the team you're going to call is Minnesota, right? Mm-hmm. Because they really wanted him. And
yeah, they were already willing to pay that money, you know, so like.
Right. I mean, they're off to a good start.
They may not want to mess with a good
team. Yeah, I mean, but who knows? I mean, you know, come on, we're, you know, they're like 5-6 games in. You know, I'd wonder if they were interested in coming back to that.
I wonder though, Brian, like if you're going to maximize the value of D'Angelo Russell, which to me, like Nick said, in some ways, that he was kind of a value asset there in the wake of Durant leaving. Sure, they wanted to try to run it back and put together a quality team this year and see what they were capable of. But as much as anything else, he was return on investment from Kevin Durant and something to roll over into something else to try to kind of extend the lifespan of what you had in Kevin Durant. So if you're going to maximize the value of D'Angelo Russell, to me, it's at the draft because one, you know, you've got your own pick there that, like Nick said, you could leverage that. And maybe the Warriors go big fish. They try to package something together to go get another star that fits as a more complementary piece to Steph and Klay. But also, next year's free agent class is quite honestly, it's pretty bad. So D'Angelo Russell, you could kind of market him as the big signing for a team at the draft right before free agency starts.
Yeah.
Nick mentioned that they do have Iguodala trade exception.
And they'll have their mid-level next year too, right, I believe?
Yes, they will. Probably taxpayer mid-level. Right. You have to probably be careful on that. But I don't know. I think watching what the Warriors do with this roster, I expect them to try to move some pieces as well.
Willie Cauley-Stein, why do they need him now?
They don't. You know, but they also have to have somebody play center. I mean, so we have a really good update on what's up with Kevon Looney because that was a very, you know, kind of got lost in the Steph injury, but that was a very unusual and concerning report.
We don't have an update really at all. I was with Royce actually the night that Steve Kerr spoke about Looney's injury in Oklahoma City, and it was really kind of sad in that Steve started saying, you know, Kevon's such a great young man. Nobody's really sure what this issue is. It's a nerve issue. He's going to see a team of specialists. You know, there was just a lot of uncertainty. Steve sounded like a father who was unsure on how one of his kids was going to come out of what had happened with this particular injury. So Looney is beloved within that organization. He just signed that 3-year deal over the summer, but nobody has a clear sense if and when he'll be able to return to the floor.
Yeah, that's a that's something that, like, you know, and the crazy thing about this, and before you go running to your the trade machine to try to see where you can trade D'Angelo Russell, keep in mind that they can only take on another $300,000 in salary before they trigger the hard cap. So if you do a trade, it's got to bring back less money than it is to go out. But the Looney thing also complicates matters too, because he is a – I don't know if you'd use the word core piece, but he's a guy that they would have beyond this season. So hopefully he's okay.
How about the – let me – this is totally random, but I was just looking at their roster. This, how about the weird irony of Alec Burks and the situation with him, of him thinking that he signed with the Oklahoma City Thunder and Paul George and Kevin Paul George and Russell Westbrook. And then so then the Thunder trade Paul George. They let Alec Burks out of his contract. So he's like, I'll go sign with the Warriors then and play with Steph and Draymond and be a key piece on what's going to be a pretty decent team. And now here Alec Burks is in the middle of a, probably a worse team.
Great than he point. Would have been in Stay Oklahoma away. City. Stay yeah. away.
This is all Alec Burks' fault.
Yeah. What, but he also got traded to Cleveland and LeBron left.
Wow.
Jeez. So he'll calculate all that. How about that run?
Yeah, he's put that actually, on his Wikipedia page.
He's actually the guy that I think is –
he's a very tradable player. I mean,
he's the guy I think will almost certainly be traded. Now, he, number one, he's easy to trade because he makes a minimum salary. And so he would
– but he's also a very helpful player, I think, for a decent team. He can give you bench minutes and be productive.
Right. So not only that, but – so he makes $2.3 million. Any team could take him because he's a minimum player. You can just take him into – I mean, not any team. You'd have to have space under the hard cap. There's only a few teams that appeal to. But long story short, any team could take him. They don't have to, like, you know, do crazy things to get rid of him. And by moving his salary off, they could literally sign, like, two other players to fill roles that right now they couldn't even take a look at. Like, even if they wanted – to sign a couple of guys from the G League, they'd have to wait because they couldn't afford to sign them. So, but that's enough about them for now.
Hello, no one is available to take your call.
Andrew, I'm going to do you a gigantic favor and not bring you in to this discussion we're about to have here, because talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Hell, talking about erectile function isn't easy. Usually we just brush it off. That's what it says here, but that's weirdly put, brush it off. I'm just going to move past that. Or we avoid it altogether. Make excuses, stuff like that. Okay, so some of our podcast listeners, you know, this is a part of their life. Some of it will be a part of their life. Some of it, somebody that they know, somebody that they trust, what have you. So, if you have an issue there, that's why you have Roman. Roman will allow you to talk to a real doctor who can prescribe real medication. It's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. The doctor will work with you to find the best treatment plan. And again, if medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. It's no big deal. This stuff happens. Deal with it. We move on with life. So getting started is simple. Go to roman.com/hoop and complete an online visit. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. So complete an online visit today. Connect with a doctor and get it taken care of. So again, go to getroman.com/hoop, H-O-O-P, to get a free online visit and free 2-day shipping. That's getroman.com/hoop.
Is it called Roman because that phrase, when in Rome?
I don't know why it's called Roman. Maybe the guy who founded its name is Roman.
Maybe.
We have a fellow employee at ESPN's MBA staff whose name is Roman. And he now has a whole nother...
He has a side business, we now realize.
He does. Apparently he's the guy we go see. Nick, staying in your wheelhouse. At the start of the season, Not that I'm a big gambler. I don't make pretty much any bets at all. Even I barely even play blackjack when I'm in Vegas. There were two numbers on the over-under board that I thought were off. One of them, I thought that the Warriors win total was too high. Well, now that's laughable. I mean, it was like 47. Now it's laughable. But I thought the Bulls was too low. The Bulls were, I think, 33 at some places. And I just thought the Bulls were going to be approaching 500, and I thought they could have a chance to get into the back end of the Eastern Conference playoffs. Maybe they still will. But they have been a disappointing team. One of the most disappointing teams in my mind in the early going. They're 2-4, but they've played generally an easy schedule. They've in my mind, they've had one tough game. Would they play the second night of the back of a back-to-back at the Raptors at home and they got blown out. But even like today, they played the Pacers. But the Pacers started Goga, their rookie, and Jakar Sampson, who's a journeyman. That was like their starting front court today. And they still got beat. And I don't think it's something that's like a red light thing. Like, oh my God, it's not exactly like what's happened with the Warriors. But I have been very disappointed in the way the Bulls have played, especially since I was a believer in them at the start of the season.
B, first of all, never bet on the Bulls.
I didn't bet.
Let's start there. You never bet on the Bulls. Also, I think they've lost five games, haven't they?
Two and five.
I mean, they've had some bad losses.
They gave the Knicks their only win.
The Knicks, the Cavs the other night in Cleveland. I mean, mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the one of their wins was in Memphis, which I watched. And it ended up being a comfortable win, but they were in trouble in that game. And Memphis has got, they've got some guys there, but it's not a great team right now.
Yeah. It's just, this is the problem always. And I feel bad because so many of my friends inside and outside of the organization, they get all hyped up before the year. Oh, it's coming. It's turning around. But look at the roster. the roster isn't very good. And I'd say this, my feelings on the Zach LaVine deal have not changed at all.
He's their best player right now, though.
Exactly. And they've built a team around Zach LaVine. How's that going to work out for you? And even more than that, I am stunned still that the Bulls went all in with Jim Boylan. I just cannot believe it. And this dates back a couple of years. You hear people in the organization go, is this guy for real? Like, is what he's saying and doing for real? And this is before he was even the head coach when Hoiberg got knocked out. But B, this is, to me, if Bulls fans want to be upset, the Gar and Pack stuff, it's been going on in Chicago for years. It's not on Gar and Pack. This is directly at Michael Reinsdorf. This is ownership. This is staying with Boylan, who people in the organization are like, what? Like, but it doesn't matter what everybody else thinks. If Mike Reinsdorf likes him and Gar and Pack sign off on it, okay. But it's stunning to me that Reinsdorf doesn't get as much blame for what's transpired in the last few seasons. And the feeling around the league always is, all right, they're cheap. Well, that hasn't changed. But the point is, he is the one who is making these decisions now. And Jerry's been the boss for years and years, but Mike has been the guy who signed off on all this stuff, especially the Boylan stuff. And the Bulls are terrible. And, as soon as Hoiberg got fired, if it's me, after all the stuff with Tibbs and Vinny Del Negro before him and Skiles, if it were me, I would have cleaned house at that moment. Guys, this didn't work. It's time to start fresh. We need to make some changes. Thank you for everything you've done. It's time to go. But not only did he keep Gar and Pax, he kept boiling. it's stunning to me, given everything that's happened since, that Mike Reinsdorf doesn't get more blame, and fans get so caught up on Garm Pax, Garm Pax, Garm Pax. Look higher.
I was kind of surprised. I mean, like, no matter what you think about Jim Boylan, he definitely coaches differently. And who knows? I mean, I remember it, you know, I can remember a time when this guy came over from, you know, wanted to, from the Italian league and wanted to play this brand of basketball nobody was familiar with and thought it was crazy. It was 7 seconds or less, and it was Mike D'Antoni. I mean, Mike D'Antoni was a guy who sort of got a, I think he was a mid-season replacement in Phoenix. And then the next year he kind of implemented a system. You know, like I've seen, you know, guys who are unorthodox coaches have success. You know, Avery Johnson, for example, I think was a guy who coached, you know, he was a very like sort of big disciplinarian. And when he came into Dallas, and I think he was a midseason replacement for Don Nelson, or was a early season replacement or something. I don't know. I don't have it off the top of my head. I'm not right. But so, you know, the concept of that, you know, we have one kind of coach and we're going completely other direction. You know, that can work. Another guy, I'll tell you, Frank Vogel, when Jim O'Brien was fired in Indiana, Frank Vogel couldn't have been more different than him. And Frank Vogel came in and had a great run there. So, okay, on its face, I don't necessarily, I can kind of get it. What I was surprised about was how much, you know, how much they really believe, you know, really gave him some power within the organization. Not only that, but they extended him, didn't they? I mean, he mm-hmm. was under contract for 1 year. I guess you don't want to have a coach on a 1 year deal or whatever it was. But Nick, didn't they gave him an extension, or they redid his contract twice. Like they did a contractual deal that sort of gave him more backing in the off season as well. I mean, this is not an interim guy. They're just sticking around. This is the guy that they wanted to do. And I say they, I mean, of course, Michael Reinsdorf is at the top of that list.
And that's the key here, B. And that's what's stunning to me. We've listed all the coaches over the last few tenures. It sounds like Jim Boylan is as locked in with, at least with Mike Reinsdorf, and by proxy, Pax and Gar, as anybody in the last however many years, which is just stunning to me. But this is why the Bulls are in the spot that they're in.
Do they really have that bad of a roster, though, Royce? Because, like,
no, I'm looking at it right now. I mean, there's some decent players on there. I think that it's kind of a malfunctioning roster, in that you look at it with Zach LaVine, and if you are saying, okay, Zach LaVine is your best player, that makes me raise an eyebrow. But kind of around that, like Thomas Satoransky, he's a nice player, good bench player. Otto Porter, solid player. Thaddeus Young, solid
player. Otto Porter
player.
Is a max player who's playing flat terrible.
He's a solid player. He's not a max player. He's a solid player.
This is where my problem is. Like, I'm looking at their team to start the year. Nick, I thought Markkanen played pretty well in the back half of last season. I know he sputtered a little bit out of the gate. And he had an injury, right? And then
yeah, he missed a lot of it. Yeah.
And then I thought he played pretty well at the end of last season. And I was like, okay, Markkanen, you know, third year, that's when we see guys make leaps. And, you know, Otto Porter, I thought that was a good trade. You know, I, you know, if you had asked me a year ago, I'd rather have Bobby Porter than Otto Porter or Bobby.
Bobby Portis.
I screwed that up. I'd rather have Otto Porter than Bobby Portis. Okay. And, you know, I liked Kobe White, and, you know, everybody's a year older, and Wendell Carter showed a lot of promise. And, you mm-hmm. know, he, you know, like, again, I'm not saying that, you know, clear your calendar for May, but I mean, Royce, I thought their roster was okay. I just, you know, they're, I mean, maybe they will be okay, but they're really not performing well at all. And today they lost to the Pacers in a game where they had the health advantage significantly.
Yeah. I picked Lauri Markkanen for most improved last year. He had moments in his rookie season where you saw a guy that, you know, this kind of hybrid stretch four that can play a little bit of five at times. He was dynamic with the ball in his hands. Excellent shooter, offensively gifted. And so, like you said, Brian, it was easy for me to see a leap last year coming, and he dealt with some injuries. He missed a solid number of games. I don't know how many it was, but definitely too many to take him out of the running for winning any kind of an award. But and then game one this year, he drops 35, I think, on the Hornets.
Yeah, I watched the game. I watched the Bulls a couple games out of the gate. I was excited to see them.
But he okay. I pulled up his game log. 35 against the Hornets. It's like, okay, nice game. And then 9-9, 18-16, 14-11. So, like, to me, he's kind of like the litmus test. He's indicative of things are going the wrong direction.
Well, and they've benched him down the stretch a couple of times, I think.
Yeah, he's not getting minutes. He's under 30 minutes in almost all the games this year.
Brian, this is a lot of talk for a bad team. I'm just letting you know.
All right. Well, it's a big market, Andrew. We have to think about our market size. All right, Roy, something more in your wheelhouse. Okay, so the Rockets are 3-3. They got blown out in Miami today. All right, that's a potential Miami flu situation. They lost at home to the Nets, or on the road. It was the Nets home game to the Nets on Friday. No big deal, right? But, you know, there were models, the computer models. We had Kevin Pelton on this podcast a couple of weeks ago telling me that the model showed that the Rockets were going to have the best record in the league. Mm. And, you know, there's some teams I'm excited about. The Rockets are not one of them. And Russell Westbrook, I feel like he's looked pretty good in a couple of these games playing alongside Harden, but that hasn't been a tour de force yet, that duo. And I think he had some crazy plus minus number today in Miami. Watching Russ play from afar for the first time, what are you seeing?
Well, let's just start with tonight's game. Take a little look-see at the box score, and you'll see Russell Westbrook with a minus 46 next to it.
What?
Minus 46. So this Sunday game against the Miami Heat did not go all that well for him in terms of that. I think after tonight, I think that coming into tonight, Brian, I think the Rockets were second to last in defensive efficiency. I assume after tonight, they probably bumped up worse than the Wizards. I don't know if that put them over the top. But, I mean, it's like one of these things where, I think in kind of hindsight, we're going, I didn't expect a backcourt of James Harden and Russell Westbrook to be so bad defensively. But, like, that's exactly what's happening here. They don't stop the ball. And there's no Carmelo Anthony this time to blame it all on. They got problems. And look, I was not a big believer in this Harden Westbrook pairing. And I know a lot of people have pointed at the chemistry that they have that was in place. And yes, absolutely. Those two guys are good buddies and they've become good buddies over the year. But I think what was always kind of misconstrued is that they were these great friends in Oklahoma City, which was not the case. They've become great friends over recent years, which is kind of strange. And I think that they've had a common theme in place that's kind of helped them grow closer, which it was Kevin Durant. But but I think that like some people have kind of said, like, well, they played together. They're going to know how to play together. These two guys, realistically speaking, have never played together, at least the players that they currently are. They're both MVPs. They're both guys that have done historic things in the NBA. They have set all-time usage rate records. These guys have never played together. The 2012 version of themselves is not the version they are now. And I think that they are very motivated together to kind of exercise some narrative demons. So I think that is probably a driving force. But look, Westbrook can't shoot, and he's not going to ever be able to shoot, and that's going to continue to exist. So they're going to have to find ways for him to be the effective player that he is. I think that we have seen those moments, though, Brian. I think that, you know, the game against Oklahoma City, Westbrook had some really good fourth quarter moments where he's grabbing rebounds, getting out in transition, leading the break, and the Rockets spread the floor so brilliantly that he's creating this type of tempo and pace that they just couldn't get into last year. I don't remember what they ranked in pace last year, but it was kind of they were painfully slow because of all the
lower isolations. Lower than they ever.
Right, and because they were so ISO heavy, and so I think Westbrook's going to help them break out and kind of play a little more free flowing. But at the end of the day, like, it's going to be your turn, my turn, and Mike D'Antoni can stagger those two guys as much as he wants, but Westbrook's shooting deficiencies are going to continue to exist because he's not going to just magically become a great shooter. His best shooting season, and I think the one that people kind of hold in high regard to say, look, Russell Westbrook can shoot. He did it this year, was his MVP year where he had free reign to shoot at any moment he ever wanted. And so he got an incredible rhythm and was able to maintain that. He had no conscience in terms of shot selection. Now you've got a Russell Westbrook that's trying to be he's trying to be mindful of shot selection, and he's not as good a shooter. So, look, they're going to win some games, but I was always skeptical from the beginning that this was going to work so beautifully.
Well, let me give you a quote from Mike D'Antoni after this game. This is courtesy of John Fagan from the Houston Chronicle. We're not in trouble, but if we think we're not in trouble, we're in trouble.
Mm. I like that.
So decipher that how you will. The one thing I said that when you talk to executives about Houston is that they expect them to feel some pressure this season. And if they feel pressure, we know that Daryl Morey has an itchy trigger finger.
Who do you think, if this goes completely south on the Rockets, which granted, we're probably knee-jerking here a little bit, but who's between Harden and Westbrook, or maybe a combination of the two of them? Which one is more likely to go first?
Well, the guy who would go would be D'Antoni, because D'Antoni's got a one-year contract. And
sure.
Even though I actually think that Mike D'Antoni is about as good of a temperament coach that you could possibly need for these two guys.
Oh, yeah. I agree.
And, you know, ultimately, if you're going to coax this thing together, D'Antoni has pulled off stuff like this before. But the one thing that you hear is if, you know, some people believe that Daryl Morey will be in a little bit of, you know, will be in a little bit of hot water, because even though he's got a longer term contract than D'Antoni, everything that happened obviously this fall, if the team that he put together, even though it wasn't him who wanted, you know, it was James Harden who said, you know, make this happen. Mm-hmm. You know, and, you know, Daryl wants to make moves anyway. So, when I've talked to executives out there, they say, watch to see if Capella comes back on the market. Capella was on the market in the summer before they knew what they were doing. Then they took him off the market when they made their big deal. Capella's contract is generally viewed as, you know, favorable. It's not a hindrance. It's got some incentives built in, like it's, I think, like rebounding percentage or something, stuff like that. But it's a contract that they could definitely use as a real asset, in addition to the fact that he's a quality player. So to me, I think that if I'm not going to freak out too much after a bad weekend, but if they do have issues, I would think that Daryl would try to address via trade. And if that couldn't be done, then I think it would be D'Antoni. But I wouldn't think that would happen.
Yeah.
You know, D'Antoni, I would hope, has some good capital built up, although not enough to get an extension with the franchise.
I just look at it, the Rockets quietly have put together one of the more impressive sustained runs. Like, I don't think people really give them enough credit for basically a decade plus of pretty high level winning. They really have not taken very many dips. If you look at like total win percentage or just total wins over the last, I don't know, 10, 12 years, the Rockets are probably top three, top four. So, I mean, they've had a much better extended run than I think people realize. Now they've had some notable playoff failures. And so
you're being kind.
I just wonder if this is a big risk. Now they were kind of in a rock and a hard place position already with Chris Paul and Chris Paul's contract and him being 34 years old. So this was kind of a decent solution to that, or maybe the best solution that they could come to, especially because you keep James Harden happy. But if this does flame out and it gets to the point where, you know, they're in an awkward spot at some point this year, you know, I don't know how retradable Russell Westbrook would be. And
not.
And look, they've already attached a pick to trade Chris Paul to get him. So I don't know if they would consider starting over at some point.
More than one pick.
I'm overreacting to a minus 46 in the box score for Russell Westbrook here, probably. But
well, I will say, Nick, I'll always have a memory of game six in Houston last year. You know, the way that game went down, no Durant. Steph goes scoreless in the first half. The Rockets are at home. This, in my mind, this was their chance to win a title. I don't know if James Harden, I can't see the future. I don't know if James Harden will ever have another chance as good as that. And I'm not saying it was his fault. I'm just saying as a future Hall of Famer, I don't know if he'll have a better chance than that, because they win that series. I think they're beating Portland, and we'll see. You know, we'll see what happens, you know, in the finals. And I just, you know, the year before it was a bad injury, a very unfortunate injury. Last year they have nobody to blame but themselves. And I remember the absolute vitriol in that both the celebration and the vitriol in and around the Warriors. The vitriol aimed at Chris Paul. The celebration where it was just below celebrating a championship. The only thing that they were missing was champagne. If they had champagne, they would have poured it on each other. That's how excited they were. I've never seen a team that excited to win a playoff series when it wasn't for the championship, especially a team that's had success in the past.
It felt like when you looked at Houston, that was it for them. It really felt like in that moment that they knew that was their chance and they couldn't get it done. And that's why I had to chuckle to myself in listening to Royce talk about the Rockets and all the success they've had over the years. That is absolutely true. But it sounds like Gar talking about the Bulls' success when they were going to the playoffs and they couldn't get over the hump. They couldn't beat LeBron. It just feels like a team that was really good in moments in the regular season, but when push came to shove, for whatever reason, they never found a way to get over the hump.
Well, and I'll just never forget, late in the night, it was late. All the interviews that happened, I think the last guy up, or maybe the second to last guy up, was Harden. And Harden sits at the podium, and Harden says, "I know what's got to be done. Something's got to be done, and I know what it is. And I'm not saying," or, you know, and he walked away. And I was like, did he just say what I think he said? Because I was like, I think he's talking about trading Chris Paul.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, it was just in the middle of so much. So that was a wild night. I just, you know, maybe the Rockets will put it together. But I just, boy, I thought they had it in their hands. And, you know, the fact that it was game five, and that's when Durant got hurt in Golden State and went down. I wasn't able to finish that game. And that was the night where Kerr went on the rant post game, you know, bleeping Giants. And I was like, yeah, you're bleeping Giants, but, you know, aren't you in trouble for this series? Cause you don't have Durant now and, you know, you're playing Houston, you got to go on the road, but they were not, as it turned out. One other thing I want to talk about, Royce, you spent some time around the Blazers last year.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of lost in the Warrior, you know, the Warriors that were so banged up, is that the Blazers have had some rough injury news in the first couple of weeks of the season themselves. They lost starting power forward Zach Collins. He's having surgery very soon. I don't know if it'll be this week. I assume it will be, on his dislocated shoulder. They don't have a timetable, but shoulder surgeries often are, you know, you're looking at
months.
Yeah, you're looking at, my guess is, ballpark 3 months there. Hassan Whiteside, who was their fill-in for Nurkic, Yusef Nurkic, until he gets back, which, you know, could be in and around the All-Star break, who knows for sure. He's already hurt. And then Rodney Hood suffered, I think, is a minor knee injury, but still a knee injury in their loss to the 76ers Saturday night. To me, if there's a team that I think there's two teams out there that I could really, really see making a major in-season move, and I think the Blazers are really at the top of the list.
Yeah.
Gap year is not the right year, but you remember when LeBron went back to Cleveland and, you know, the Heat, you know, broke up, and, you know, the Spurs were still formidable, but they were aging. There was this period where it was the NBA was available to be grabbed. It ended up being the Warriors that grabbed the league, and pretty quickly. this is the year that we're in right now. We are in a year where it's a straight toss-up. The Lakers are probably not going to be as good this year as they could next year. Give the Lakers another year of transactions. I think they move into more of a championship zone next year. Who knows? We'll see. The Clippers, in my mind, are the favorites, but who knows with health and everything like that. Like the Blazers, if they're gonna do something, this to me is the year to do it. And they have assets. They have a couple of big tradable contracts in Whiteside and Kent Bazemore. They control all of their picks going forward. They have a couple of really intriguing young players. This is a team that could make a significant move. The move that I think makes the most sense for them, well, I think Kevin Love would be amazing there, not to mention that it's his hometown. Mm-hmm. And I do think that Kevin, after years of maybe not wanting to be in Portland, I do think he is more open to playing in Portland now than he was in the past. But that's a complicated situation because he's got 4 years and $120 million left on his contract. He's had lots of injuries. And he's the Cavs franchise player right now. And to trade for a franchise player who's owed over $100 million, I think it's a complex trade to put together. Even though you could trade Whiteside for him and add an asset or two, I think. But, you know, what do you do with that much money? The player that I think would make sense there is Danilo Gallinari.
For sure.
I don't know where the Thunder are with what they plan for this season, but I feel like that's a fit that, you know, could really make a big difference in Portland if that could all come together.
Yeah, I think Gallinari, you know, I was watching the game between them the other night, and it was obvious in that game just how shorthanded the Blazers were up front. That was when they were just without Zach Collins, but now they're even more so, and even with the healthy Zach Collins, I think Gallinari makes a lot of sense for them. They've taken a step back in terms of shooting, losing Al-Farouq Aminu, losing Mo Harkless. They're a little lighter, I think, in terms of perimeter shooting around Lillard and McCollum. They're really relying on Rodney Hood to be an effective offensive player, and Hood has been somewhat inconsistent throughout his career. He had a great postseason for them and really kind of established himself and was somebody that they wanted to bring back. But, man, if you look at the backside of that roster and a lot of the players they're playing, Brian, Anthony Simons has actually looked okay for them, but, you know, he's somebody that they're counting on. Scala BC Hare got minutes the other night. Hazonia tonight.
Oliver's
been starting.
They're in so much trouble in the front court that they've been playing Anthony Tolliver and Hazonia at center at times.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, you know, I think the Blazers, you know, one of the things, you know, I spent about a week up there even at the end of the regular season, just kind of, you know, I talked with Damian Lillard, and one of the unique things about him is he's not somebody that really puts an organization under pressure. That's always kind of been his mindset. But there's no question about it, as he's in these prime years of his career, he got a taste of it last year. He got the Western Conference Finals. And while I think that there's some built-in equity for the Blazers front office, for Terry Stotts, for Lillard even, that also kind of creates this perception that you're not far away. And so for them, you know, they're going to face that sort of crossroads. They haven't necessarily really gone both feet all in towards championship contention. They've spent money, but like you said, they own all their picks. They don't have all these first round picks out where they're saying, okay, we'll give you that to try to get a player that's going to, you know, knock us up another little bit of a tier. So that's, I think, the decision they're going to have to start making is, you know, Lillard is a guy that's planted his flag. He said he's comfortable in Portland. They just want to be a good team. They're going to remain a good team as long as he's there. But if they're going to start trying to, you know, scratch that itch, because they've tasted it. They know that they're not that far off. I think they had some fortunate breaks to get to the Western Conference Finals last year, and they got a dose of reality when the Warriors showed them how far they still are away. But like you said, this is an opportunity, and there are available players, I think, for them to go get, and it could put them in the conversation. Because as it stands right now, with the way the West is, you can't afford to fall too far behind. And the Blazers might kind of compromise themselves in the first couple weeks here if their depth can't step up and kind of sustain over this period.
I think they'll win games.
Damian Lillard's going to win you games.
Won them that game in Oklahoma City. I watched
absolutely.
The end of it.
Yeah, the Blazers, they stunk. They quite frankly stunk through most of that game, and Lillard was basically like, all right, I guess I got to win it. And he hit three threes, and that was it.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to win games, but I just don't know if, like, can they do it? And, the thing about it is, when Paul Allen passed away, there was a period of time where we weren't sure, and when I say we, I mean sort of the NBA, like, what was going to happen with that team? Were they going to be sold? Well, it came out pretty clearly that, all right, they were not going to be sold, that they were going to remain within the Allen family. Jody Allen, his sister, mm-hmm. became the owner. But it was going to be like, well, wait a minute. Paul loved the Blazers, and he loved competing, and he loved the drafts, and he would buy draft picks. And for years, he was a big spender.
Yeah, big luxury tax.
Yeah, and they were a tax team last year. And so you're thinking, okay, well, they're not going to, like, be sold and, like, move to Seattle or something. But are they going to continue to be, like, the big spenders that, basically operating like a big market in a small market? Well, Jody Allen has cleared a lot of spending. The Lillard extension was the no-brainer, but huge extension to C.J. McCollum as well. They extended Terry Stotts. They also, I'm pretty sure, extended Neil O'Shea, mm-hmm. The GM. They have the second highest payroll in the league. They trading for Whiteside and Bazemore put them in that realm. So they're headed for the tax again this year. And Jody Allen has for a while, and I'm sure she was very busy. She was in the wake of her brother's death and taking over this massive inheritance. And she also owns the Seahawks, among other things now. But she really became a regular at the she doesn't live there, she lives in Seattle. She became a regular in the playoffs, and she was really seeming to enjoy it. And then she came to the home opener this year. I think she's really engaged and excited about this. So to me, the question is, like, can they, I guess it's been answered. I guess they're going to spend. And so if that's the case, and that light is somewhat green, why not go for a Gallinari? Why not go for a Gallinari and maybe try to extend his contract?
If you throw Sam Presti a first round pick, he's going to say, you got it, buddy. he's going to try to, maximize the value of all the players that he has on his roster. And I don't think the Thunder are in complete teardown mode yet. If they wanted to dismantle, they could dismantle. And I think the Thunder want to kind of see what this team can do. And while the Thunder are 2-4, and they've lost all close games, they've been very competitive. There's some lights at the end of the tunnel for them, but they also very clearly understand that they're not competing this year necessarily for anything more than maybe flirting with the 8 seed. Maybe, that's kind of a pie in the sky thing. So if you want to access some of their players, Gallinari is one of the most clearly available ones because he's on an expiring deal. He's 30 years old. He's not part of their long-term strategy. You just pick up the phone and you offer pick, and there's a good chance you're going to get it done.
Who are the best two teams in the West in 5 months?
Clippers won.
I think the Lakers look pretty good. They've got some deficiencies on their roster. I still think they're like a player short, and I don't know how they're going to get that player. Maybe Kuzma will grow into it.
Are you believing in the Dwight Howard revival, the Dwightessence?
Apparently he had a great game tonight, didn't he?
I didn't see any of the game tonight. Let me just say this about Dwight.
Just following on Twitter.
As long as you don't have to count on him, there's a chance that you're going to be okay. And I don't just mean counting on him, his statistics. I mean counting on his health, counting on him, being in good shape with other players in the locker room, etc. When he's a minimum player who's a backup, And he can deliver, you know, a handful of good games. Maybe it'll be more than a handful. Maybe it'll be three handfuls. But I think it's okay. I mean, from what I understand, you know, the Lakers were skittish about signing him. And they brought in like four or five centers. I can't remember who was in that group.
Joakim Noah was one.
Joakim, yeah.
You know, I don't know if this is out there. I don't think it's really been out there. But, you know, Joe got hurt.
Yep.
Has that been out there, Nick?
Not to any kind of major extent. Because, right. That's the guy I thought that the Lakers were going to sign for the fit. Not necessarily that he was going to give you 12 and 10 off the bench maybe every night, but he would have fit in seamlessly into the locker room.
Other than the fact that he and LeBron hate each other.
No, but I think it was one of those things. They hated each other when they were against each other. When they were together, it would have worked. I really believe that, but we'll never know now. And I give Dwight this. I didn't think at this point in his career he could give this kind of performance off the bench and needed. And we've already seen it in a couple games, and granted it's November 3rd, but it's a credit to Dwight to get his body and his mind in a place where he could contribute. I still just don't believe
this was his last chance. This was his last chance.
Absolutely. I just don't believe that the Lakers in 6 months are going to be there in the end, just because I don't believe in the depth on the roster. And I don't believe that LeBron and AD can play at this level and stay healthy all the way along. But they're certainly off to a nice start.
That's fair. So when they worked out, guys, I mean, and Joe, you know, he got injured. I don't think he got injured. I don't know when he got injured, but he suffered a significant injury from what I've been told. And, you know, his career is really in jeopardy, really.
Dwight Howard, 14 and 13 on 7 of 7 shooting in 21 minutes tonight.
I mean, that's so pretty good. But from what I understand, anyway, that you know, when they worked those guys out, Dwight was just far and away the best looking player. And, they weren't expecting to need somebody. You know, Cousins had gotten hurt and they kind of huddled and were like, man, like, you know, any way you look at this, Dwight is far and away the best available center out there.
Not that it matters, but why is JaVale McGee starting over him right now?
That's the paradox of the Lakers, which is that for the Lakers to be at their absolute best, you play Anthony Davis at center. Problem is, you really got to be careful playing Anthony Davis at center. So many people focus on the fact that whether he wants to play there or not. The reality is, he's injury prone, and you play him at center and you increase his chance of injury. The Pelicans played him at center last year. They needed to get Mirotić on the court. So they played him at center and they played Mirotić a lot of four, and he got hurt. And it wasn't a type of injury that ended his season. And yeah, they were holding him out of games because of his whole issue with the trade demand, but he also got hurt. He hurt his shoulder. And so that's the thing, that's the thing that the Lakers have got to solve. That's a riddle that they've got to solve.
Yeah, and he's already banged up this year, so you don't, you know, you just further.
Yeah, he's already dealing with an injury. Yeah, so that's.
I think it's a shoulder again, too.
Yeah, it's not just about whether he wants to play. There's a reason why he doesn't want to play center. It's not a diva move, like, oh, I'm a graceful perimeter player. It's that he doesn't want to get banged around. And, you know, if you look at his frame, I get it. Even though he's added a lot of weight, like, you know, you go out there and play against Jokic and Nurkic and Gobert and say you're having a good time. You know, it's hard. But, you know, I would say, you know, to get back to what you asked, Nick, I mean, I would assume that Denver will get their ship righted. Although I felt that, you know, Jokic looked terrible in China to me. And that's carried over. But, you know, they have a lot of talent. I think they're also a team that's primed to make a trade at some point.
Yeah.
I feel like it's the Clippers and everybody else.
Thank you.
If the Clippers get healthy and can stay there.
Thank you.
I know the Han agrees with me on that one.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But they're unproven. And they've got players with injury issues. And I'll tell you one thing, you know, when you talk to people in Toronto who watched Kawhi play the first 10 days of the season, One of the things that they said was, I hope he can keep up playing like this all season. Because last year, you know, they were really, really protective of him, and they weren't sure about whether his, you know, I think he's missed 20 games with load management or something in that neighborhood.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that's a...
And they could do that because they're in the East, you know, and so, like, you know, the Raptors could sit Kawhi Leonard 15, 20 times, and you could keep winning games because you're in the Eastern Conference. And the Clippers, you know, you can't just rely, just say, oh, we're going to sit them 15, 20 times. Because you're in the West, and it's a little bit different, and it's not that easy.
And to be clear, Paul George. And to be clear, there's no animosity from Toronto. It's just like they're watching him play, and they're like, boy, he is really expending a lot of energy and playing really, really hard, and that's great.
Right.
But you know, that was
right. I'm just
something
saying, load management is a harder thing to do in the Western Conference, in my mind.
And for sure,
I think the numbers would bear that out. Just West versus East.
I mean, if we're up, if you ask me. And I'm not a professional in this regard. LeBron James would never play another back-to-back in his career, and I've been saying that for 3 years.
Right.
B, you've been around LeBron as long as anybody. Do you think he can maintain at LeBron-like levels for an entire season at this stage of his career?
I've made a decision that I am not going to sell short on LeBron. I will be the one who says he's got gas left in the tank all the way till he reaches the end game. I don't think we've ever seen an athlete like him. Karl Malone is the only comparable player, but Karl Malone, as great as he was, has been in as incredible of a body as he had. He still didn't play the game like LeBron does. He didn't expend the kind of energy LeBron does. So, I believe in it. I believe he can. Now, you know, if you watch LeBron closely over the years, there is just 0.0 doubt that he is slowing down. I remember, I think the first thing that I noticed with LeBron was maybe midway through his second stint in Cleveland, he started hooking guys all the time on drives, whereas that left hand would sort of loop around the guy's, hip. So that he could get that extra burst to get by. That was the first thing that I noticed LeBron conceding to age when he was about 32, 33-ish. And if you watch, you know, if another thing that you watch about him when he takes his jumpers, his lift isn't quite what it used to be. Just a little bit down, but it's not quite there. So, you know, there's no doubt you can see the age. And it's really shown up on defense where he just – although I feel like he's played better defense this year than he did last year, for sure. So there's definitely signs of concession he's making to age. But, you know, I think all in all, you know, his ability to withstand a huge load is been one of the defining aspects of his career. So I'm going to stick there and believe that he can do it. And my feeling on the Lakers has been the same since August, which is – I think they're going to win a ton of games. You know, assuming Anthony Davis doesn't miss 35 games or LeBron doesn't miss 30 games, I think they're a 50-something win team. I think they're a second-round team, and that depends on the matchup. Maybe they get to the conference finals or not. I think they're a player and a half short. Maybe Kuzma can kind of be that player, but this is my whole thing. I don't know where they're getting that player because they really have nothing to trade. And maybe they would argue that they do have stuff to trade, but – that my analysis of the Lakers has not really changed, and I think it's going to be a really fun year. And for the Laker fans, and frankly, the NBA right now needs the Lakers to be really good. We've had a huge blow here with Zion knocked out for a period of time. Now the Warriors, who have been a mainstay for your sort of transient NBA fan, of which there are just millions, now the Warriors are out. I mean, you know, how soon till we see ESPN and TNT moving out of Warriors national TV games? I'm sure
now. Do it now.
Yeah, I'm sure it's they're looking at it right now. By the way, I would try to pick up the Blazers because I think. Lillard is a is fun
on TV, man.
More Clippers.
Yeah, the Clippers are at their max, but I like, for example, I really enjoyed watching the Blazers play that game in Oklahoma City the other night. I watched the fourth quarter and I really enjoyed it. You know, the league right now, you know, in the East, the Knicks are still trash. And the Celtics maybe, but, you know, the big markets in the East, you know, Philly is coming on, but, you know, the NBA needs the Lakers to be really good. And I think they will be really good this year, but, I don't know if they're, and I don't think they're championship yet, but Nick, do you have another team you think is going to do it?
No. We're so far over right now.
Oh, okay. All right. Guys,
we didn't even get
time flies when you're.
I thought he was saying no because of he didn't
want anybody. Clippers and Clippers alone. That's it. It's the only right answer.
All right, guys. Well, thank you for listening. Thank you, Royce. Thank you, Nick. We will be talking to you soon. Everybody, have a great week, and talk to you soon.